Chapter 77. It was a staggering sight to see the Titanic propped high and dry in the huge canyon of a dry dock. Already the noise had started. Welders were attacking the clogged passageways. Riveters were hammering against the scarred hull, beefing up the temporary repairs made at sea to the jagged wounds below the waterline. Overhead, two sky-reaching cranes dipped their jaws down into the darkened cargo holds, only to have them reappear minutes later with mangled bits and pieces of debris clutched in their iron teeth. Pitt took what he knew would be his last look about the gymnasium and upper deck. Like bidding a New Year's Eve goodbye to a passing piece of his life, he stood there and soaked up the memories. The sweat of the salvage, the blood and sacrifice of his crew, the fragility of their hope that had, in the end, carried them through. It would all be left behind. Finally, he cast aside his reverie and walked down the main staircase, and eventually found his way to the forward cargo hold on G-deck. They were all present and accounted for, and looking strangely unfamiliar under the silver hard hats. Jean Seagram, gaunt and trembling, paced back and forth. Mel Donner, wiping trickles of sweat from his neck and chin, and nervously keeping a concerned eye on Seagram. Herb Lusky, a metasection mineralogist, standing by with his analysis equipment. Admiral Sandecker and Kemper, huddled in one corner of the darkened hold and conversing in low tones. Pitt carefully stepped around the twisted bulkhead supports and over the rippled deck of warped steel until he was standing behind a shipyard worker who was intently aiming his cutting torch at a massive hinge on the vault door. The vault, Pitt thought darkly. It was only a matter of minutes now before the secret hidden inside its gut was laid bare. Suddenly, he became aware of an icy chill. Everything around him seemed to turn cold, and he began to dread the opening of the vault. As if sharing his uneasiness, the other men in the dank hold became quiet and gathered beside Pitt in restless apprehension. At last, the worker turned off the fiery blue jet of his torch and raised his face shield. "How's it look?" Pitt asked. "They sure built them good in the old days," the worker replied. "I've torched out the lock mechanism and knocked off the hinges, but she's still frozen solid." "What now?" "We run a cable from the Doppelmann crane above, attach it to the vault door, and hope for the best." It took the better part of an hour for a crew of men to wrestle a 2-inch-thick cable into the hold and fasten it onto the vault. Then, when all was ready, a signal was relayed to the crane operator via a portable radio transmitter, and the cable began slowly to straighten out its curves and tighten. No one had to be told to move back out of the way. They all knew that if the wire took it in its head to snap, it would whiplash through the hold with more than enough force to split a man in two. In the distance, they could hear the engine of the crane straining. For long seconds, nothing happened. The cable stretched and quivered, its strands groaning under the tremendous load. Pitt threw caution aside and edged closer. Still, nothing happened. The vault's stubborn resolve seemed as firm as the steel of its walls. The cable slackened as the crane operator eased off the strain to work up his engine's RPMs. Then he revved up and engaged the clutch once more, and the cable suddenly went taut with an audible twang. To the silent men who looked anxiously on, it seemed inconceivable that the old rusted vault could stand up to such a powerful assault. And yet the inconceivable was apparently happening. But then, a tiny hairline crack made its appearance along the upper edge of the vault door. It was followed by two vertical cracks along the sides, and finally a fourth running across the bottom. Abruptly, with an agonizing screech of protest, the door reluctantly relinquished its grip and tore off the great steel cube. No water came out of the yawning blackness. The vault had remained airtight during its long sojourn in the deep abyss. Nobody made a move. They stood rooted, frozen, mesmerized by that uninviting black square hole. A musty stench rolled out from within. Lusky was the first to find his voice. "My God, what is it? What in hell is that smell?" "Give me a light," Pitt ordered one of the workmen. Someone produced a fluorescent handlight. Pitt switched it on and danced its bluish-white beam on the interior of the vault. They could see 10 wooden boxes, tightly secured by stout leather straps. They could also see something else, something that turned every face ghostly pale. It was the mummified remains of a man.